Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. It's the internet's most live comic book and pop culture podcast, and my name is Chris Sims. And with me, as always, Matt Wilson.
That's me.
I don't have a funny name for you today.
Well, the funny name is Matt Wilson, who is in balmy Sunday evening Charlotte, North Carolina. It's the end of Heroes Con. The sound you likely hear in the background right now, the churning and sputtering.
Those are generators powering food trucks.
That is the sound of a food truck that just served us some delicioso food.
Word.
And we ate that, and it was good.
Hey, guys, what y'all need to know is that we just came out of a video store.
We did.
A video rental store called Vizarts.
Yeah.
Like Vizards.
And it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool little video store. There's a video store in my current hometown of Asheville called Orbit that is similar in that their stock and trade is weird stuff.
Now, as you can tell, Matt and I are live. We're in person. We're standing right next to each other. Matt's got a cheer wine that he's drinking.
Sipping on a cheer wine.
I'm about to go. Kurt Franklin's holding my comics that I'm about to go buy. My girlfriend's walking across the parking lot coming towards us.
Yep.
We just finished Heroes Con. It is the end of 3 days of Heroes Con. 3.5 days, to be QH.
Are you guys paying, like, Vegas guests
tickets? No, we're recording our podcast, sweetie.
Oh, sorry.
You're on the recording now.
Oh, sorry.
Say hi.
Hi.
Just like my wife, Marlene, Aiden has officially laughed on this podcast. But unlike Marlene, you're laughing at something that is occurring on the podcast instead of something on TV in another room.
Yeah.
Can you hurry up and finish? Because I want you to buy me some ice cream.
Okay. Well, cool. Just a second. Just a moment, my love.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Okay, so I gotta go get some ice cream, so let's tell everybody what the deal is. We just came through Heroes Con. We're tired. We're a little bit loopy.
Yep.
We're wanting some ice cream. So what we are going to do, no checks,
no recs,
no comics reviews.
Nope, we're going to go straight into our interview segment that was recorded last night, Saturday night, in the hotel room that Chris, that later in the night became the epicenter of three noise complaints that we were told about.
Listen, I'm a baller.
But before those noise complaints, we had Tom Scioli, the writer and artist.
Co-writer,
that's right. John Barber is also co-writer of that book. But co-writer and artist of Transformers vs. G.I. Joe from IDW. We just had him on to talk about, in part, Transformers vs. G.I. Joe, but also just some comics that he's into and sort of the weird trends of comics over the last few decades.
Yeah. It was a good time, so we are going to go to that now, and we'll catch you on the flip. All right, we are here in the hotel room at Heroes Con 2015. It's just me, Matt Wilson, our special guest, the co-writer and artist of Transformers vs. G.I. Joe, one of my favorite comics ever, and 15 other people.
It's eight other people, an audience of eight.
Audience of eight. But Ken Lowry, who might actually get on the show.
No! You're the one who's always been a proponent of this, but I can't allow this to happen. I'm the gatekeeper of War Rocket Ajax.
I just texted him and told him to come up with Robert. They're bringing bourbon.
Well, you are living this with this on your shoulders.
Okay, Edward, when Ken comes in here, you tell him to shush. All right, so Tom, welcome back to the show. Have you been on the show before?
I have not.
You have not, but I've interviewed you before.
You've interviewed me, just not
on the
podcast.
Yeah. And the last time I interviewed you, we talked about Transformers vs. G.I. Joe, obviously.
Right.
But you told me that you wanted to come on the show and just kind of talk about the comics that you were into.
Yeah, so here we are.
So,
I when I first came in here, I saw you had this stack of comics, so I immediately just had to sort of look through them, and I figured I could probably look through them like while we're talking. But I guess these are Nth Man, the Ultimate Ninja, which is, I think Larry Hama says this is his favorite.
He said the reason I was looking forward to this con was because I read an interview with Larry from 2012, and he said that was his favorite thing he's ever written.
It looks really sharp. Like, I haven't checked this comic out yet, but so far, I mean, the first page looks pretty amazing. There's a bunch of airplanes flying over a city, and it looks as good as anything Larry's ever, you know, written for.
Well, I mean, on the cover, there is a man twirling a katana in one hand while shooting an AK-47 with his other hand, one-handed. He is the Ultimate Ninja. That is what the Ultimate Ninja does. I'm excited to read it. It was actually supposed to... He pitched it as a 24-issue story. It was going to be like a 500-and-some-page graphic novel. And then it got canceled at 16. So I'm excited to get to the end of that and read about it.
Yeah, it looks pretty crazy.
I like that this episode is suddenly a live commentary on it.
So it's just we're just going to read Ant-Man the Ultimate
Ninja. Right, we're going to read Ant-Man.
As I said before we started, I'm not editing a segment of this, so we're just going to have some long silences
right, as
I'm reading comics.
As I read,
now,
carefully.
You've seen Jim's. We talked about Jim's.
I saw Jim's black and white scene, and
that's
Jim Rugg. Jim Rugg did a zine, a black and white zine, where he collects art from like just really strange black and white publications. And I told him, I think like people are going to be kind of fooled by this because it so mimics the format of these things, where it's just like basically a pig fuck, that you'd almost be fooled into thinking that like a bunch of guys just hired, like put all their money together to hire like a really good artist to make like an awesome cover, you know, for their zine.
Yeah, like I thought when I saw this that this was Jim like redrawing pages from Black and White Boom Books, but then I hit the Reagan's Raiders ad,
because
they take over where Rambo left off.
Can I just say that I would not be surprised if Jim Rugg published a comic that was called Pig Fuck.
So now you mentioned I almost bought you the comic book adaptation of Demolition Man.
Oh wow!
Today.
Yeah, I need to read that. You should have.
Because you said you've been reading a lot of movie adaptations lately. Like, what did you read?
Logan's Run.
Okay, that was a Marvel one.
Yeah, Marvel one. Yeah, Food of the Gods, which was also Marvel. The Island of Dr. Moreau, which had art by Larry Hama, the creator of G.I. Joe. The Steranko Outland adaptation, 2001. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, you've read 2001 already.
But sort of, yeah, like looking more closely at them.
See, because when you said you had read, you've been reading movie adaptations. I hope the phone picked up the sound of that cork gently popping out of a bottle of bourbon across the room. When you said you've been reading movie adaptations, I thought about stuff like, I had the Rocketeer adaptation
that
Russ Heath drew when I was a kid, which is such a weird thing to go from Dave Stevens to Russ Heath.
Russ Heath, everything he does is just impeccable, fun to read. Just, you know, he's just really, popping up in strange places.
Yeah. I had that one. I had, there was a Dick Tracy one.
Yeah, Kyle Baker.
The Kyle Baker did, which, that's probably my first Kyle Baker comic.
I had that comic, too. That comic is nuts.
Yeah.
Like, the designs of those villains are crazy enough already, and then Kyle Baker just takes them, like, turns them up another notch. It's really, really cool.
So, if I see that Demolition Man one, I'm gonna... If they have two copies, I'll get one for you and one for me.
Please do.
Because I would love to see how they adapt Demolition Man for comics.
Now, what has happened to the movie adaptation
DVDs.
Comics? I mean, sure, but, like, there was home video when that Dick Tracy comic was coming out.
I mean, there was a transition, but I think there used to be the idea that a comic book could be a like an advertisement for whatever it is you're selling, the same way that, you know, you can advertise on TV. And eventually they realize that that isn't it at all. Like you're going to reach a very small, very specific audience. You know.
I always felt like it was the desire to. You know, stuff used to take a lot longer to come out on home video. So if you wanted to see Dick Tracy again, you could either pay another $6 to go to the theater, or you could pay $3 and read it as many times as you want.
I think the promotional aspect is big, too, because like a lot of those tie-in comics, the adaptations would come out sometimes even before the movie was in the theater, or at least like concurrent, too, not like around home video time.
Yeah.
So like... Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. But then also, I would love to like dig into when that realization was actually made, because I feel like even into like our current period of like big superhero movies, there were like comics adaptations of those. I know there was a comics adaptation of the first two X-Men movies.
Yeah,
there. I mean, there was a comic. There have been comics adaptations of all the Transformers movies.
Yeah. But I don't, like, there's no comics adaptation of Avengers Age of Ultron.
But now what you're getting is
Superman Returns.
There were prequels to Superman Returns. Okay. Was there an adaptation?
I assume.
Because I was going to say, like, what you get now is you get the comic book prequels.
Yeah.
Because they're doing that with Mad Max, where there's, like, six comics, which, they're fine. They're completely unnecessary.
Well, but you also get the, like, not really tie-in comics, but it's like, here are the characters from the movie. In a comic altogether.
Do you remember the Get Smart movie they made with... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Steve Carell.
Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway? Mm-hmm. The most believable screen couple.
And Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Do you remember how they made a separate movie about, like, the two minor characters? Like, the dude from Heroes? Like, how they just shot another movie that they released direct to DVD while Get Smart, the movie, was in theaters? Because they did that. That's the thing they did.
That sounds like a Movie Fighters movie.
I think it might be.
Anyway, let's get back on track.
On track to where?
I don't know, but back to talking about favorite comics. I mean, we were talking about movie adaptations. Like, what are some other movie adaptations that you find of interest?
I mean, what you were talking about made me think back to that time that they were, you know, they were a thing, and I just remember RoboCop. I wanted to see RoboCop so bad. It hadn't come out yet, and I got the comic. It was a little oversized. It was black and white, and so I got to, you know.
The last time I remember a movie-related comic kind of being put out there as an event is when, of all publishers, Avatar, putting out the Frank Miller script to RoboCop 2. Mm-hmm. As a comic.
Uncut.
Yeah, it was the Frank Miller uncut RoboCop 2. And it was just like, we're going to make this a big event thing.
Adapted by Stephen Grant.
Yeah, and adapted by Stephen Grant. And then it kind of like, I mean, it came out and I guess people paid attention to it, but like, there's just not that interest in movie comics.
It was broken up into issues, and reading it in issues, it was like highly unsatisfying. But recently I wanted to give it another look, and so I bought like the trade of it. And it's a lot of fun. And then they did like a RoboCop 3, a similar thing with RoboCop 3, like more recently. And the funny thing is, reading the adaptation of the RoboCop 2 script and the comics adaptation of the RoboCop 3 script is you find there's all these redundant scenes in both, because it's like he took all the scenes that he didn't get to use in RoboCop 2 and then put them in his RoboCop 3 script. So you're reading like variations of the same story twice.
Now, I have never seen RoboCop 3. Because I watched the trailer for RoboCop 3, and I was like, no, I'm good. I mean, I know RoboCop's got a jetpack in this one, and that does sound like something I'm interested in. But also, RoboCop's got a jetpack in this one. So, would you suggest that I just go straight to the comics adaptation?
No, check out the movie. Check out RoboCop 3. It's a lot of fun.
So that is a RoboCop 3 recommendation.
I have a massive spoiler at the end of RoboCop 1. He says, "What's your name?" And he says, "Murphy."
Right.
And then it's the end.
Great scene.
At the end of RoboCop 3, he asks him, "What's your name?" RoboCop.
No!
I had to.
Oh, it's upsetting. I don't...
Break the tank. Turn it around.
Oh. So, let's see. We're talking about movie comics. What else are you reading?
I'm just thinking of, like, the stuff that I picked up today at HeroesCon, I grabbed a one of the old Carmine Infantino Adam Strange comics. It's like it's the one where Adam Strange is sort of caught between planet Earth and you know whatever planet he's from.
He's always like this, and he's like
flying towards them, and they're like about to crash into each other. It's like a crossover with Hawkman. So I grabbed that. I did a tribute to that cover in an upcoming issue of Transformers versus G.I. Joe. So I figured I should probably own a copy of a comic that I paid tribute to, you know, rather than just going by like a Google image. So there's that. We were looking at the Mike Hinge Experience portfolio. I don't know if you know who he is. Mike Hinge, he was an artist that Steranko published. Steranko took like a very strong interest in his work and published like a really nice like sort of portfolio book, I guess you'd call it, of all his artwork. And you can see sort of like a cross-influence going on of like sort of this guy being influenced by Steranko, but then Steranko subsequently being influenced by this guy. It's very like stark black and white technological imagery that is very closely related to what Steranko would do in his Outland movie adaptation.
Let's make sure we're still recording.
Yeah, I get worried.
It's still recording.
So now we know for next time.
Carry on.
So there's that. And, the Star Wars treasury from the 70s, where it's like just the, you know, that massive oversized...
Which you're wearing the Star Wars t-shirt.
Star Wars Marvel comic t-shirt. Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to lie, the editor of X-Men 92 also edits the Star Wars books. And we have had the conversation about Jackson, the green rabbit, mm-hmm. that was introduced in the Marvel Star Wars. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we can't use that.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even want to talk about it. Like, oh, when's Jackson getting ongoing?
I'll bet there was a giant green Star Wars rabbit coming back? Yeah, he's like Bucky O'Hare.
Yeah, exactly.
Star Wars. I'll bet there was a massive fight between Lucasfilm and Marvel at the time over who, like, actually owned the rights. And it split him in half.
He became Bucky O'Hare.
That's a great story. Like, that's a story that should be told about a rabbit split in two.
Those, like, anytime I wonder if maybe I'm, like, going too far with, like, the Transformers versus G.I. Joe books, I think about the Star Wars comics from Marvel. They were these massive-selling, licensed comics about, like, the biggest thing of its time, and they're, like, almost uniformly awful.
Oh, and they do, like, they go, like, the great thing about the Star Wars comics, I haven't read them in forever, because in 2005, I cut Star Wars out of my life.
You kind of have to at some point.
Exactly. Like, I spent a lot of time with Star Wars, and Star Wars did not pay me back in a way that I appreciated. But reading those Marvel comics is bonkers, because, you know, like, you would find, like, old, like, they were super popular, so in the 90s, growing up, like, I would find Star Wars comics everywhere, and of course I'd buy them. And it's so weird because, you know, there's 3 years between Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. There's Marvel comics all 3 years. And so you get their 4-issue adaptation of Star Wars, which is nuts.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's really interesting to me about those first 4 issues is that that comic, nobody could ever make a comic like that now, because it's a comic made by people who don't really know what Star Wars is, never saw Star Wars, and so they're sort of guessing what Star Wars is based on a few photos that they've seen.
Because it's out before the movie.
Yes. And the world has transformed since. There was a very short window of opportunity where such a comic could be made, and now we know what Star Wars is, so we can't make those sort of wrong assumptions now the way they did then.
If anything, comics, like we were talking about comics being like a promotional thing for a movie, if anything now, the movie, it's not a promotional thing for a comic, but it's always like the movie comes after the comic and is based on it, and so it's like the Scott Pilgrim thing, where, like, it follows the comic up to a point, and then it just becomes this whole other thing, because the people making the movie
haven't read the last volume of Scott Pilgrim.
They're concurrently
or like the Game of Thrones thing where that TV show is going to become completely different from the books because that TV show's got to keep going even if the books don't keep coming out. So it's like the whole transaction is flipped. Like the thing that led before is now the follower.
Well, the thing about the Star Wars comics, and I'm gesturing at Matt with a beer bottle.
A broken beer bottle.
Jamal, you want to go?
this is the second time tonight fighting someone with a beer bottle has been talked about.
Yeah, that's why we're in the room and not in the bar. The thing about the Star Wars comics was like, A, if you wanted to experience Star Wars before the movie came out, and then you wanted to experience the further Star Wars, that was the only place you could go. And this is a thing I've noticed with a lot of Marvel licenses. Because, you know, Marvel had ROM, and they had G.I. Joe, and they had Transformers. And they had, like, in the 90s, like, in the mid to late 90s, they had Star Trek. And, you know, Star Trek bounced around. It was...
Yeah, wasn't it DC?
DC, and then it was Marvel, and then it was DC again.
You're talking about the Star Trek characters that crossed over with the X-Men?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about the two Dr. McCoys. I know what's up. But, like... The thing is, if you, like, just looking at the covers, because, you know, I used to have the job where I would do back issues. Like, that was my first job at the comic store, was just sorting and alphabetizing back issues, and that's why I was putting together all these runs that I would eventually buy. Like, if you look at those Starfleet Academy comics, those covers are functionally indistinguishable from X-Men comics. Like, it's the same layouts, it's the same dramatic letter, like, this is the worst day of this person's life. And it's like, there's an X-Men cover like that, there's a Starfleet Academy cover like that. And you go back and look at those 1977 Star Wars comics, and like you said, we all know what Star Wars is.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen it, we know how it's supposed to work, and then you see the cover to Star Wars number 2, and it's the cantina scene. And the cantina scene in Star Wars is very specific. You know, my friend doesn't like you. I don't like you either. The old man cuts off a man's arm. The old man who's not supposed to get into rage cuts a man's arm off. There's blood everywhere. That's a weird scene by Star Wars standards. The Marvel Comics version of that, it's one of my favorite covers of all time because it's Luke backed up against the bar. It's Obi-Wan Kenobi in front of him with a lightsaber like a baseball bat, and it's like 20 aliens surrounding them, and it Luke's going, "Swing that lightsaber, Ben, or we're finished!" And I'm like, that's the Star Wars I want to see. Like, and like you said, it's these dudes that, you know, that those issues were being made, and those, you know, like, the first two or three came out before the movie.
Yeah.
So it's people who have no idea what this is supposed to be. It's like, yeah, it's just some space movie.
But it's that, like, talking about splitting a story up into issues and how maybe that didn't work for the RoboCop 2 script. Because,
you know, it takes them 2 issues to get to the cantina.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, that was the thing where it was, like, they were trying to hew very closely to the script of the movie and produce the closest thing to that script. Whereas, like, when Marvel's doing Star Wars adaptations, it's like, we have to have a climax in all 4 of these issues.
Yeah.
Even if we're not even hitting the climax of, like, the second act of the movie. So we have to take whatever is happening and make it exciting somehow. And that's how you get stuff like that. And, like, that's another thing that I think is just kind of, like, lost in... I mean, there aren't adaptations of comics, or adaptations of movies and comics now. But, like, I don't think they would be doing that anymore if there were.
Yeah. It's like, you know... And I think that's why you get stuff like the Mad Max prequels, where it's just like, oh, here's one issue about these guys, because you can do, like, one little adventure with them before they go and do all that stuff.
Well, they tend not to be... there's no requirement to have a climax within a comic now anyway, so that criteria is gone.
That's not what you do.
No.
You had Scarlet kill her kids. you had Scarlet burn down a town in the Quiet issue.
Yep.
Oh, Tom, I love that comic. I love it so much.
So we've talked about a lot of different time periods of comics, like, with a weird through line being movie adaptations. But I just wonder if there's, like, a particular, like, era, either decade or just couple years, that you find particularly fascinating. Because we've talked about
60s, 70s, 80s, and even like early 90s up through the different times? Like, is there one period where you're just like, why were comics like this at this time?
Well, I mean, there's that, like, when you're looking through like a box of old comics, all you can see is sort of the top, and you can sort of judge where to even start by, like, if am I looking at yellow paper? Am I looking at glossy white? So it's kind of like that era where it's the yellow brittle paper. That's where I want to dig. You know, so that would be like, yeah, like I guess everything up until the very 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 late 90s.
Now, Tom, every time we come to a con and talk to you, for the last 2 years, you have told me to look for one single issue. 2 years ago, you told me to look for that issue of Batman. That's the only Batman story Steve Ditko ever drew, which was great.
Yeah.
And then last year, it was that issue of Lois Lane with the typewriter, which is also great. Do you have a single issue I should look for tomorrow on the last day of the con? While I'm looking for G.I. Joe European Missions.
I mean, those are a lot to live up to. There's one I saw on the floor that you're probably already aware of, that is when Superman has... It's a Starlin Superman comic. I think it's called something else. It's called Adventure Comics, but the cover is sort of Superman versus the Spectre. And it's basically the issue where Superman meets God. Like, he tries to, like, break... He tries to break some, like, hyperspeed barrier, and he's stopped by the spirit, by the Spectre, because if he goes any further, he's going to be in the realm of God. And then God, you know, once they sort of settle their differences, God starts talking to him, and the script is sort of like a, you know, like a cursive kind of ornate script. So that's the one that comes to mind.
There's an Alan Moore Rick Beach Supreme based on that issue.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and which was the other thing I was going to suggest. Like, there's that Alan Moore Supreme run, and I was just today looking at the issue where they meet the characters from the old EC comics. So it's basically the Rob Liefeld version of like the 1940s Justice League, and it's 1949 New Year's Eve. At Justice League headquarters, and the year's about to turn into 1950, and so all the horror hosts, the Crypt Keeper, the Old Witch, he had other names for them that they were called, like the Morgue Minder, the Tomb Tender, but they all sort of come to visit like the ghosts of Christmas past, except they're the ghosts of decades future, and they're going to show the Justice League how irrelevant the whole concept of the superhero is going to be in the 50s, when the problems that they have to deal with now are corruption, drug abuse, racism, just all these massive things that a superhero can't just punch.
Yeah, the best part of that issue, because Rick Veitch does all the tribute art in it, and the flashback art, and he does a Harvey Kurtzman Mad Magazine.
Yes, bit. Like a super duper man.
Yeah, like super duper man. And, like Supreme comes out and he's like, I can't deal with this kind of cynical mockery. It's pretty amazing. That's a good issue.
Yeah, I know, like, super duper man was always really important to Alan Moore, that his whole, like, that whole period of his career that he got very famous for was sort of taking Mad Magazine's, Mad's super duper man, but playing it straight, like taking all those things that you would use to make fun of Superman and point out how absurd it is, except make them kind of scary and poignant and horrifying. And
so Marvel Man, Miracle Man is a direct descendant of Captain Marvel's.
Yes.
That's a real deep cut joke for everybody who's really into Harvey Kurtzman out there. All right, well, Tom, do we have any questions from the audience?
Well, before we get into that, let me explain how listeners can ask questions.
Okay. Matt, if people want to get on these little chats that we have each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how can they go about that?
Well, usually what you would do is you would sign up for an account on Twitter.com, and you would follow the ISB, that's Chris, and the Matt D. Wilson, that's me. And one of us would put out the call for questions.
I might have Matt 420 Blaze at Wilson.
Please don't muddy the waters on this. It's the Matt D. Wilson.
I don't want any more of this. No, I'm not even going to say it. I'm not even saying it because I'm not encouraging these people anymore. Now, let me get back on track. You wait for the call for questions Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then you can ask a question of our guest. Now, this is a special occasion, so what you would need to do to ask questions of Tom Scioli is hop in your time machine and head back to June 20th, 2015. Get on a plane, come to Charlotte, North Carolina. Head to the Westin. That's all the information I'm going to give you. You're going to have to figure out the rest on your own.
It would also, if you have a time machine, you should probably go back further and become our friend. Maybe go to high school with me. And then you can be in our small audience.
We did assign a bouncer at the front door of the room who might kick you out if you are a time traveler.
It'd be amazing if somebody busted in the door right now.
So before you hop in your time machine, start working out, practicing your sword play,
or just become our friend. Either way,
it's probably easier to become our friend than to learn sword play.
I don't know, it's pretty tough to be our friend. Anyway,
I'm very friendly.
Anyway, it's time to ask questions. So if anybody has a question for Tom, now's the time.
Brandon has a question.
At the end of the series, is Duke going to be okay?
I don't know. I don't know, because whatever plan that I have for like the events in this series, if I come up with a better idea in the course of making it, I'll use that instead. So even if he is like fated to die or have some horrible thing happen to him, I might come up with something that I like better that you know, where he doesn't.
Can I say that I like how Duke is wearing it in your book, is wearing a tank top that says Duke?
Yeah.
Well, Duke went to Duke.
He went to Duke University in my university. Yeah. Which is how he got the nickname Duke.
Because Conrad Hauser is not working.
No, yeah.
Way back when I first talked to you and John about it, you mentioned that you had like that massive pitch. And, yeah. And since then, you know, I've talked to you about it, and you're like, yeah, you know, the thing you said was that document works for you. You don't work for it.
Right, yeah.
And then we were talking about that interview with Larry Hama where somebody asked him how far ahead he was plotting when he was working on G.I. Joe. And he said, 2 or 3 pages at most.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense when you consider, like, every 3 issues, there's a new playset, there's a new vehicle, there's a new soldier that he has to introduce to the comic. And so rather than having to adjust his plans around it, he just didn't make plans. And that book's amazing. So, like, is there a, like, are you in a place where you're plotting ahead, or are you just kind of, like, do you have it in your mind well enough?
It is one of those things, like, I plot ahead, you know, as much as I can, and when in doubt, I do have that document to go to. But yeah, I mean, a lot of issues end up very, very differently than I would have predicted, and I love that. That is part of the process. I work till the very last minute on a story. Since I co-write it, I draw it, and color it, and letter it. Like I'm like the last person to have it in my hand, so I can change things up until the very last moment, and I take full advantage of that power.
Any more questions?
Go ahead.
Gonzo raised his hand.
Forgive me.
This is Jay Gonzo, creator of I'm Not a Dull Student, who has bribed his way onto Movie Fighters, by the way.
I explained that to him.
He told me, friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Is there an issue that you go back to if you're, like, looking for inspiration? Like, if you just don't have it, is there, like, a comic you can pull out and just thumb through and it always kind of gets your juices going?
Yeah, that is, like, part of my process. Like, when I write, I like to have access to a bunch of comics. I'll just, like, spread a bunch of comics out. Something, you know, I'll just sort of grab things that I think may relate to it, or just, you know, whatever looks interesting. And I do, like, I do kind of need that. There have been times where I tried writing when I had stuff sort of packed up, moving, and it was very different. You do need sort of little prompts just to like kind of get that ball rolling, or when you hit those dry spots to kind of jumpstart things.
Well, so, what would you say the most effective issue is for you? The one that really always prods you in a direction?
Oh, like one that I might keep returning to. Well, within just within like G.I. Joe and Transformers in particular, there's one issue, I forget the number, I think it might be 18 or something, but it's the one where where Colonel Hawk and Destro are sort of fist fighting
on
the back of a tank.
Oh, yeah. That one's awesome.
That one, like that is a pretty great one, and that, yeah.
That's the issue where Hawk punches him in the face, punches Destro in the face, and Destro says that it's more difficult to punch polished beryllium steel than to punch flesh and bone. And that's why we called the band in Subatomic Party Girls Beryllium Steel. That's where that comes from. That's a good ass comic.
Yeah, it is a good comic.
It's
yeah.
Two men fighting on top of a tank. That shit's awesome.
Alright, Matt Fisher had a question.
So working with licensed property is sort of notoriously frustrating in the editorial process, but I think, you know, it's we could probably all agree that the Transformers G.I. Joe thing is fucking bananas. And when I picked up the comic the first time, I was like, how did this happen? Do you feel like the people that you're working with at the publisher get what you're doing? Or do you feel like they're like, the kids like it, so we're just going to let it happen?
No, I mean, yeah, the publisher, they get it whole hog. And that book is incredibly popular within the offices of IDW. Like yeah, they totally get it and they love it.
John Barber's name is on the book.
Yeah, John Barber is a co-writer of it. So I mean, it's got his full stamp of approval. And I think I never worked on any other license, so I just know this one, and it's been pretty there haven't been any like big major like, no, you definitely can't do this or anything. So, but maybe it is true with like Star. Maybe that does happen with Star Wars or some other license. But with this license, I haven't hit up against that. But I also think it might be how I'm inclined, because I just don't care. Like, I'm gonna do what I want to do, and maybe it's not in my best interest. But I almost don't care about the consequences. I just want to make a really really cool comic. So if I make a really cool comic, and it goes, you know, before somebody who stamps like no on it or something, like I made a really cool comic, but so far, like nobody's put that big no stamp on it.
Getting past IDW,
yeah.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from Hasbro?
The executive at Hasbro who sort of handles the comics license wrote me recently this like really like beautiful letter about just how like, you know, how, you know, in the beginning when this was first proposed to him, he was skeptical and wasn't quite sure, but that just like he's been like blown away by the work and just real, you know, and just really, you know, wanted to, you know, let me know that. So you know, that's like that's the feedback, the direct feedback I've gotten. Like you said, licensed comics can be sort of a nightmare for editorial, and I think, you know, part of the job of an editor is to sort of shield the creative team from like not even having to think about those kind of issues. So I really haven't gotten any like information other than that about, you know, what the back and forth has been.
All right, well, I think that about does it. Tom, Transformers vs. G.I. Joe, Volume 1's out now in paperback. Yeah. Number 7 just came out a couple weeks ago.
Right.
If people haven't read the book, it's I don't know if it works as a jumping-on point, but everybody should definitely read number 7.
I treat every issue as a complete entity. So you can... I prefer you start at the beginning with issue 0, but you could jump in on any issue.
Yeah, it's the weirdest one in some ways. They're all the weirdest one in some ways. I mean, there's a giant Cthulhu monster who shows up named Kobarula. That's exciting.
The way I've heard the book talked about in just, I don't know, articles I've read about it, I want to hear it firsthand from you. Like, the way I've heard it described is like the approach of like, you know, a kid with a toy box full of toys who doesn't necessarily know all the established backstory and is just making a story on their own with the toys in the toy box. I mean, is that your approach?
I mean, a kid playing with toys in a toy box, the way that that I approach just creativity in general and making things like evolved out of that thing that we all did when we were kids. It's just something like I never stopped doing. I guess that like that description doesn't fit what we're doing, because it's being created by a kid who has a thorough understanding of the mythology, but either has sort of maybe some contempt for it, maybe better ideas for it, and maybe, you know, reverence for things that are, you know, less apparent or less revered. So I wouldn't agree with that statement.
All right, well, everybody read it. It's great. Seven's latest issue. American Barbarian's coming out. New printing from IDW.
Yeah, IDW is putting out a new printing, a new hardcover printing.
So if American I get that, that'll be the third time I've bought it.
You will buy you'll buy American Barbarian as many times as we make it.
I'll buy American Barbarian as many times as they put it in front of me, because it's always going to have the Tangle of Swords and Two Tank Omen in it. Two Tank Omen is a pharaoh who rides around on two tanks for shoes. That's amazing. Anything else coming out?
Also, the same month, July, as American Barbarian is coming back, the third and final hardcover edition of Godland is coming out.
Is that the Celestial edition?
The third Celestial edition, yeah.
Nice. Well, our guest, Tom Scioli. Tom, where can everybody find you online?
Twitter, at Tom Scioli, and on my website, which I haven't updated in about a year, ambarb.com or tomscioli.com.
Alright, Tom, thank you, and I want more mystery box, too.
Certainly, yeah.
Let's make this the first ever War Rocket Ajax interview that ends with applause.
That's it. That's it. We did it.
Awesome. It was supposed to end with applause.
All right. Thanks once again to Tom Scioli. Y'all should know that after that interview, I went and bought him the Time Bandits adaptation and the Conan the Barbarian movie adaptation, and gave them to him as a present. So thanks again, Tom.
All right. Before we wrap up, we're not doing a listener question segment. We're not doing quotes. We're a heavyweight champion. But just to give you guys a little something extra, I think we should talk about the best things we got at HeroesCon 2015.
All right.
Chris, what's the best thing you got at HeroesCon?
Well, I got the Eminem's new book. Ben Mara didn't have any new stuff, unfortunately, but there is a full-length, 100-page Amwat one memoir on Terror, Terror Assaulter
coming out from Fantagraphics.
I got, actually got Jim Rugg's new zine, which is called BW, which is just pages from Black and White Boom comics that he has found in quarter bins that he has just pulled out of the comics and just put together in a zine. He did not write or draw anything in it, but it is exactly my jam.
It is curation, completely.
Yeah. I also bought a Transformer.
You did?
I really did.
It's got little helicopters.
It's Windblade, the fan-created Transformer.
Looks pretty cool.
And that was the best thing you got.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and tell everybody that friend of the show, Jay Gonzo, is going to be appearing on an episode of Movie Fighters in the future, and here's why.
That is probably the best thing I got, actually.
Jay Gonzo bribed us with art. He painted the Phantom for me on a piece of cardboard, and it is tight as hell.
Yeah. And he did, like if Destro had gone to a restaurant a lot in the 60s, the caricature of Destro they would put on the wall, he drew that for me. It's pretty great.
Pretty great.
It's pretty awesome.
Also, I just want to let everybody know that I drew The Rock. I was only planning on drawing John Cena and Kevin Owens for people, but a very special request was made for me to draw The Rock. I folded and gave in. And that drawing of The Rock, I'm fairly proud of. I did not photograph it. I hope the photograph ends up on the internet somewhere. We shall see. I will request the person who got it to post it.
right. Sometime in the future.
And that does it, everybody. About.me/Chris Sims, X-Men 92.
About.me/Matt D. Wilson. Copernicus Jones is still on Kickstarter. You can contribute to that right now. Before we wrap up, we do want to let you know there is some bonus audio for Patreon backers. You can listen to me get my birthday present from Chris.
That's right. I gave Matt his birthday present. Spoiler warning. It's fucking awesome.
It is fucking awesome. Go listen to that if you're a Patreon supporter. If you're not, you can go to patreon.com/WarRocketAjax and support the show. We're done.
We're done. There's Kevin Mellon. Let's go hang out. Bye, everybody.
Yeah! It's for every one of us. It's not for every one of us. It's not everybody. Every man, every woman, every child, everybody Flash. We are everything to Flash. This day on, that every breed of mongrel live together in peace.